This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Often when you think of what's going on in the world, especially politically, it's easy to see the glass as half full. Well, this week we're going to highlight some of the good things that have been going on. A little later in the show, Joel Rosenberg joins us to talk about the Vice President's trip to the Middle East. Also, Tony shares his thoughts on the confirmation of Kansas Governor Sam Brownback as the Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. And to start off our program, on Wednesday of this week, Glenn Stanton joined Tony to talk about a piece he wrote for The Federalist about the state of evangelicalism. Glenn is the Director of Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family and served as a consultant to the George W. Bush administration in the area of fatherhood. Here now is Tony Perkins.
Glenn, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's good to talk to you. It's been years, but
it has been.
With an old friend.
It has been. It's great to talk with you. Of course, I've been keeping up with your work, though, through the years, and you continue to do great work. Going back to one of the first books you wrote, Marriage Matters, and I remember using that extensively as we were working on the covenant marriage front back in Louisiana. This interesting column that you have in The Federalist, you write this, that religious faith in America is not going the way of the yellow pages and travel maps that we keep hearing. It's just a matter of time. They're saying that it's just a matter of time until Christianity is totally and happily extinct. And we're hearing this narrative over and over. And your response to that is that not so fast.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, what prompted me, and Tony, you're familiar with this article, The Atlantic this month just wrote an absolutely goofy piece on Mike Pence and his faith and how, quote-unquote, weird his faith is when he's just a good, run-of-the-mill evangelical guy. And one of the statements in there was that, hey, Christianity is shrinking, it's just a matter of time before it goes away, and that all Christians, especially the Christian right, should be very concerned. Well, it is just absolutely not true. And again, this research, very recent research coming to press at the end of last year, shows us that while mainline Christianity is like hemorrhaging members like crazy, I say they're leaving those buildings like they're on fire, can't get out fast enough. These Harvard scholars say that biblical Christianity, evangelical Christianity, has largely just held constant. It's maintaining itself, it's not shrinking, it's even growing a little bit, but it's the mainline churches that are shrinking, declining, and the churches that teach Scripture, that teach real Christian discipleship, that are faithful to what Christ teaches us, those churches are doing quite well. And it's not even just the Harvard research. I ask in this article in The Federalist, just look at your own churches. If you go to a mainline church, then look at what's happening. If you go to a good Bible-believing church, and we know what those churches are, it's likely that they have numerous services every Sunday morning to deal with the crowds that they have. I mean, those churches are growing. They're doing quite well. And so when we hear these silly statements about, well, Christianity is on the decline and that America is becoming increasingly secularized, a lot of the elites are, but in middle America across the country, no. These scholars say that vibrant faith is persistent in America.
Yeah, you're right in this that the folks at Pew have been reporting for years that while the mainline churches are in drastic freefall, the groups that show the most significant growth is the non-denominational family. In fact, you state this, fact, evangelical churches gain 5 new congregants exiled from the liberal churches for every one they lose for any reason. I mean, you're right. They are leaving the mainline denominations, quicker than Baptists leave a church picnic that's out of fried chicken. I mean, they are heading for the doors. And but here's the point, and I think the media wants to use this, and the left wants to use this to make, I believe, Christians feel like they're isolated and alone. But again, the evidence that is uncovered in this report from Harvard suggests that the opposite is true.
And that's exactly right. And I think, Tony, you nailed it, is they want people like us to think that our groups are shrinking, that our numbers are shrinking, and that, you know, basically we're going to go the way of the horse and buggy. Where if, and we hear this all the time, if you came down from space, a Martian, you would think that gay and lesbian individuals were just all over the place because of what they see on TV. Well, it is Christianity that is growing, and it's vibrant Christianity. We need to understand, nobody really comes to church, nobody really comes to Christianity looking for what I call 2% Christianity, thinking right. about 2% milk. It's, they want whole stuff, they want cream, they want the real thing, and teachers, pastors that are teaching the Word of God faithfully, people are voting with their feet and shuffling over to their churches in great numbers. And so the Harvard people will tell us, as far back as we can measure these sorts of things, 50 years back, the evangelical churches, in terms of proportion of the population, are remaining constant. And also, in terms of the proportion of religious people in America, the religious conservatives now make up a larger proportion of all religious people. The progressives, if you will, or the liberal religious people, those people are not growing. They are not growing in influence and sway. It's really people like us, the more conservative folks. And that, indeed, is very, very good news.
Glenn Stanton, my guest. You're listening to Washington Watch. We're talking about a piece that he wrote regarding information out from Harvard, a study that they did looking into Christianity today. And here's one aspect I think that's going to cause some people to run off the road here. So guys, keep your eyes, guys and gals, keep your eyes on the road. Listen to what Glenn's going to say here. Let's go back to the founding of the nation. And let's look at whether or not church attendance and adherence to Christianity has declined or increased.
Yeah, this is Rodney Stark. He is a leading scholar in sociology of religion at Baylor, and has written, I mean, he's just widely, widely respected. And in one of his books, he has a little chart of looking at how church attendance has happened since the colonies. And he says that church attendance has increased every decade since 1776. So we have more church-attending people per capita in the population than we did in, you know, the good old days, if you will, of colonial America in 1776. And so it wasn't bad back then, but what religion has done very clearly and unmistakably, and Christianity has continued to increase and increase and increase from those days. We are not growing more secular, we are growing more faithful, if you will, in our commitment to Christianity. And again, our people, believers out there going to church every week, they need to know that the wind is at their backs. This is the movement of more of the population than not. And again, that is good news.
And another aspect of this, Glenn Stanton, is the fact that the United States is different than many of the other nations, where we're seeing what's happening in Europe and the decline of Christianity there, just because it's happening there. And I know there are some trends we see here in the United States that are troubling, but the evidence suggests that America is not going the way of other nations.
Yeah, that's exactly right. These scholars, they always use these fancy terms, and what they were testing is what they call the secularization thesis. And that is, you see the secularization of Europe, and is America following that trend? And so that's what they were actually measuring. And they found no data for that whatsoever. And they said that faith in America remains persistent and remains vital, and that there is no data whatsoever for the secularization thesis, that we as Americans are becoming a more secular people, a more secular nation, that we are really those who take their faith really seriously and teach it and learn it We are remaining constant. So, no, there is not an increasing secularization in terms of the American people. Now, there's increasing secularization in the schools and in the media and in movies and things like that. But in terms of where all the rest of us live, no, we're not turning more secular.
The point is, genuine Christianity should fill us with hope, because it is not dwindling. It's not dying on the vine. If it is truly connected to the vine, it is living, it is vibrant, and it is bearing fruit. And speaking of fruit, one final point before we run out of time here. Just yesterday, the passage of discussion I had with my kids as we read on a daily Bible study was in Psalm 127, where it says, "Behold, children are the heritage of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is his reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth." And that's exactly what this study shows, that faithful people are having more children, and that's one way to impact the growth of Christianity.
And that's exactly right. I mean, fertility really does direct the future. It's not the liberals that are having the kids and raising them well. They're, you know, aborting too many of their kids. It's the Christians that are having more kids, raising them well, teaching them well. And this research also tells us that good Bible-believing Christians do a better job at passing on their faith to their children than any other group.
Yeah. Hey, Glenn, we got to leave it there. Fascinating article. I'm going to encourage people to read it. And hey, great to connect with you again.
Absolutely, Tony. Thank you.
If you want to find out more about Glenn Stanton or find the article he wrote for The Federalist, head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, I want to invite you to be a part of keeping Washington Watch on the air by going to TonyPerkins.com and making a tax-deductible contribution. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with best-selling author Joel Rosenberg.
What is the purpose of the military? To fight and win wars. The Obama administration abandoned this basic, common-sense principle by allowing those who identify as transgender to serve. Thankfully, the Trump administration has announced plans to stop this policy from negatively affecting the military's true purpose. Recently, Representative Vicky Hartzler has championed this cause in Congress. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch Congresswoman Hartzler share congressional insight on this issue.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Last week, Vice President Mike Pence made an important trip to the Middle East, which included the very first ever appearance by a sitting vice president before the Israeli Knesset. To help us fully understand the importance of this trip, Tony is joined by bestselling author and an expert on U.S.-Israel relations, Joel Rosenberg.
Joel, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Shalom, Tony from Jerusalem. Great to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you there. We've had a little activity there in the last few days with the vice president. You were there at the Knesset when he spoke. Give us your thoughts on the vice president's trip there to the Middle East.
Well, you really have to look at it from two different lenses, or maybe three. First is how did Israelis see the speech and his visit? How do evangelicals overall see the vice president's speech and visit? And then how do our Arab allies see it? And Israelis, this was a grand slam home run, Tony. Again, it was such an honor, humbling really, to be in the Knesset parliament and to hear the first ever vice president of the United States address the Israeli entire government right there. And since my wife Lynn and I have been friends of Mike and Karen Pence for many years, it was particularly special to see him there making the case. So the Israelis were electrified. I mean, I lost count of how many standing ovations. It was from the Israeli perspective, it could not have been better. From the evangelical perspective, overall, I think most evangelicals are very excited about the vice president's, not only his speech, which was so well written in so many ways, and had more scriptural allusions and quotes than I honestly think, Tony, any speaker at that podium inside the Israeli parliament has ever used. It's just not part of the discourse here. But he did it respectfully and very humbly. Not every evangelical, however, is happy. They certainly the Arab believers, Palestinian believers, are not happy. And I think there are American evangelicals who, while they support, of course, Israel's capital being Jerusalem and the embassy moving eventually, they're not sure this is a good time, this right moment. That's the second argument. And then the third one is the Arab neighbors. He went to meet with President El-Sisi in Egypt in the exact same palace, in the exact same room you and I.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that in a minute, because in many ways he followed our footsteps as we went to both Egypt and met with the president there, and then to Jordan. And so I want to get to that aspect as well, because that was fascinating.
They're not happy. So let's just, that's the short way to put it.
Well, let's talk about the, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's the way the speech is viewed. And you cannot help but look at it in some ways through theological lenses. So I think that affects the way some people see this from
that's
the
true.
Standpoint of how the church, how Christians are to approach the nation Israel. But let's go to the geopolitical with his first stop with President El-Sisi. That was our first stop in the Middle East when we went over there just 2 months ago. Significant step for the vice president to meet with the president of Egypt.
It was, and particularly now, you and I saw firsthand. We heard directly from the mouth of President Sisi how much he wants to rebuild the Egyptian alliance with the United States. He is fighting radical Islamist terrorism. He is trying to rebuild his economy, and he wants in with a robust American alliance. So, for no senior official, American official at that level or higher, has been to Egypt in more than a decade, and certainly not during President El-Sisi's tenure. No one's come to show him the respect that you're our friend, you're our ally. There's still things we got to work on in terms of disagreements we have, fine, but we are with you. Mr. President, we're with you, Egypt. And that was super important, and I think he did a good job in a very, challenging environment because of this Jerusalem controversy.
Well, I think it's important for a couple of reasons. One, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, you saw the same thing I did. I think Egypt is fairly fragile right now, coming off the 7 years of what they've been through, and I think they could fall into the arms of someone else. And so I think it's very important the United States respond to their overtures of wanting a friendship and helping guide them on what I think could be very significant in the Middle East when it comes to religious freedom and respect in Muslim countries.
Absolutely. The fact that President El-Sisi wants this relationship with the United States is so important because, obviously, his predecessor, who was the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, absolutely did not, and was a tyrant. So this is good, but he's also, as we met with, about nearly 60 Egyptian Christians, all of whom said, listen, there are challenges, but things are getting better. We're moving in the right direction on religious freedom, human rights. There's a long way to go. They were clear with you and me and our team that they don't want to give a rosy picture, but Sisi is moving the country in the right direction, and he needs to be encouraged and helped. So that was very, very important. And for Vice President Pence to go and personally meet with him and talk about these issues, strategic issues, I think was a very important signal.
Now, prior to the vice president going during the Christmas season, there were attacks again. You and I, we've been continuing our communication with the Egyptian officials there, and there have been attacks on Christians, Coptic churches. But the government, very aggressive in dispatching police, military to protect them. Is that a part of building those overtures to say, look, we're serious, we're putting action to our words?
Absolutely. One of the things that struck me about meeting with President El-Sisi was in that nearly three-hour meeting. It's still amazing to me that he, while we did not deserve it, he treated our visit like we were heads of state, that much time and attention that he gave us. One of the things he made clear was he he doesn't see Egyptians as Muslims or Christians or other minorities. You're Egyptian. And he wants to treat everybody equally. That has not been the policy of Egypt for, I don't know, ever. So that alone, you know, that he's saying, we're going to dispatch whatever amount of force is necessary to protect every person in our society. And since Christians are being targeted by the Islamic State, the Muslim Brotherhood, and others, then we'll protect their churches during Christmas and New Year's. And again, there are many steps that have to still be taken to protect Christians and give them their full freedom. But we really walked away feeling and hearing from people that they are moving in the right direction for the first time in who knows when. So we need to encourage people who need to be encouraged and honor, give honor to those whom honor is due. And I think that is the case with President Sisi.
Joel Rosenberg, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us this afternoon, my friend.
My pleasure. Great to be with you from Jerusalem.
If you want to find out more about Joel Rosenberg, just head on over to tonyperkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'll be right back with a special message from Tony Perkins.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? Pornography fuels the sex trafficking industry. Each click of pornography creates a demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. Victims of sex trafficking are often coerced into having abortions. To learn more about how you can help stop this triple threat, go to frc.org/traffic.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Wednesday, the Senate confirmed Kansas Governor and former Senator Sam Brownback to be the Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. After the months-long process, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins decided to share his thoughts on Ambassador Brownback's confirmation. Here's Tony Perkins.
I'm thankful that finally, after it's been over 6 months, the Senate yesterday finally confirmed the nomination of Governor Sam Brownback to Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom. I mean, this is critical. I cannot overstate how important this is to have someone of Sam's commitment and caliber working around the globe to speak out on behalf of religious minorities, Christians included, who are being persecuted for their faith. As you've heard me talk about on this program many, many times, we are at unprecedented levels of persecution, and we have a responsibility, I believe, as a nation, and in particular as Christians in this nation, to speak out on their behalf and use every means possible. Now, I hope to have Sam on the program on a regular basis and work with him to bring greater emphasis and attention to this issue. And churches, pastors, I hope we'll make this a focal point of praying for and working for the well-being of Christians and other religious minorities around the country. So people will be free, as the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights says, to have religious freedom, meaning the ability to choose to change their religion as well. Now, here's the disheartening and shocking aspect of yesterday's confirmation of Senator Brownback. He was confirmed only when the vice president broke the tie. Every Democrat in the United States Senate voted against Sam Brownback, a former colleague who has decades of experience and a track record of helping the persecuted. And not just Christians. That was one of the criticisms, I think, that Durbin put out, that he was simply wanting to help Christians. That's not the case. He has a history of helping religious minorities in Iran, Russia and other parts of the world when he was senator. And I've known Sam for over 20 years and worked with him and was in his office when he was a senator from Kansas and met with some of these people that he helped bring out of repressive and dangerous situations. He's worked on the human trafficking issue. And so I cannot think of anyone better. But it is, folks, I hope you're seeing what's happening. This is a wake-up call. We have come to a point that politically we are so polarized that religious freedom is no longer a consensus issue among Republicans and Democrats. It is the Republicans, and some of them are a little squishy, and they've got to be cajoled, they've got to be encouraged and prodded at times, but also applauded when they do the right thing. And I want to give a shout out to Mitch McConnell for working this through and getting Sam's confirmation through the process. But folks, if you have a senator that voted against the confirmation of Sam Brownback, I want to encourage you to let them know how disappointed you are. Folks, this is a harbinger. This is an indication of things to come. And that's why we cannot, regardless of what the left would say and the attacks that come for our engagement in a system that is filled with flawed people, okay? We have to continue to stay engaged and influence them to the best we can and uphold biblical truth and ideas in the process. So anyway, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com, and be sure and weigh in with your United States senators over the confirmation of Senator Sam Brownback.
You can find links to contact your senator when you head over to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.